Welcome back to the Life Care Services Health Services Division podcast series. My name is Meredith Mall, Director of Rehabilitation Standards, and I will be your host for today's podcast. Today we are going to delve into the recent release of the research related to Medicare Part A PPS payment reform. As we are probably all aware, the federal government and their regulatory agencies have become increasingly concerned with therapy service delivery in relation to SNF payments. CMS recently hired a consulting group called Acumen to draft a proposal to change the system from a volume-based payment system to a value-based payment system in accordance with the Impact Act. Very recently, this research plan with the proposed reform was released to the industry, and we are going to delve into this research in today's podcast. So why the increased focus on PPS therapy payment reform? The federal government has been focused on minimizing or eradicating waste, fraud, and abuse in the SNF industry. As part of this initiative, there has been an intense focus on therapy delivery in the SNF. Both MedPAC, which is an independent congressional agency that was established to advise Congress on all things Medicare, so both MedPAC and the OIG have been very critical of therapy reimbursement in our industry, and they both have a profound influence over CMS. MedPAC, in particular, specifically feels that therapy is over-delivering treatments in the SNF. They've been very vocal that while payments for therapy continue to increase, that there is little correlation to better outcomes that may also be achievable in a lesser level of care. The OIG has also been very vocal regarding therapy delivery in the SNF. Their continued focus on overpayments for therapy has once again made it to their annual work plan for 2017. The OIG has specifically tasked CMS to look at how therapy payments could be reduced or changed altogether to relate more to the patient characteristic versus the volume of minutes or units of therapy services that are delivered. So why have MedPAC and the OIG become so overly concerned with therapy payments? When CMS collectively took a look at the rehab RUG levels from 2005 through 2013, despite the increase in the number of beneficiaries entering the system and the increase in life longevity, they felt that there were patterns they could not ignore, specifically as it relates to the Rehab Ultra and Rehab Very High categories. The thresholds of the majority of the minutes that were following into these two categories gave them concern. So as it relates to the Rehab Very High, that was minutes 500 through 519. And for the Rehab Ultra High, that was minutes 720 through 739. This kind of led them to their hugging the rug theory, as they call it, and placed emphasis on determining the appropriateness of that service. So is more therapy beneficial becomes the question, and really specific to delivery in the SNF. So besides the factors of the typical SNF resident now being an older patient generally with potentially more needs and or receiving more extensive services, and the fact that the SNF therapy delivery is usually more intense in terms of frequency and duration in comparison to hospital therapy or home health therapy, comes the factor that the industry is, in general, billing more Med A days than historically. So if you look at most of the existing research that has come out since 2005, when CMS kind of started their ticking clock looking at service delivery, you will find that the evidence does indeed show it actually does demonstrate an increased benefit to the patient. So increasing the amount of time or services delivered to SNF patients is indeed positively correlated with an increase in functional improvement, an increase in the discharge rate to home, and a decrease in preventable return to hospital. So on average, one additional hour of therapy per week yields a 3.1 increase in discharge to community. So what is the research plan poised to be? So we know the goal, we know what the theories are, and we kind of know the research behind therapy service delivery. CMS, under the direction of MedPAC, hired this consulting firm called Acumen to revise the therapy portion of PPS, which has morphed now into the entire breadth of our current system. Acumen has enlisted a technical expert panel, or a TEP, as we'll refer to it in this podcast, in order to obtain stakeholder and expert input into their plan. And so this TEP has met several times since 2015, and they recently released their research of a proposed plan. And the goal was to basically formulate a payment system that complemented the goals of both the SNF value-based purchasing program, right, and the Impact Act. So they wanted to come up with a budget-neutral model that also separated out nursing components from therapy components, since our current system directly links the two of them, and therefore SNF reimbursement then hinges on the number of therapy minutes that are delivered. So the barriers or difficulties that they faced centered around the nursing piece is because we don't really have a paper trail that's specific to nursing services for which to metric, kind of like we do for therapy. So, for example, currently we are only required to record the number of therapy minutes on the MDS, not nursing minutes. And nursing is also currently bundled with non-case mix for non-rehab patients, so room, board, administrative, and capital costs. So these facts in themselves create, I think, a unique set of challenges. But what the research basically suggests is that the healthcare industry as a whole needs to narrow the profitability margin across healthcare silos. So that's from the post-acute sector LTAC all the way through home health. And in order to do that, payment should be based on patient characteristics and utilize as many standardized measurements and tools as possible. So these characteristics would be based on things that are the highest predictors of cost, such as their inpatient stay and their diagnosis, their age and functional status, and the patient's cognitive status and comorbidities. Their proposal includes payments that are based on more routine stays for therapy and would potentially increase payments for outlier costs or medically complex patients like vents, trachs, diabetes, end-stage renal disease, wounds, and IV meds. So they provided basically three approaches to payment, which would still be per-day payments in the SNF. And the first was more front-loaded, where you would receive a substantial payment up front that would steadily decline over the length of stay. The second option was more of a mid-road option, where there would be a block of days paid at a very distinct rate, which would also linearly decline after that first block. And then the third would be a non-linear declining daily payment that would reach a constant daily payment after a certain day. So this becomes a very interesting plan when you crosswalk it to bundled payment programs and mandatory bundles that exist out in the healthcare industry, where potentially the SNF then has a lot of resources and costs that end up being front-loaded as a result. Now, when you break down these tiered proposals, you really get a good glimpse into how the payments would actually be calculated. And so our current PPS system is made up of three components, right? You have therapy, nursing, and a non-case mix component. And our payment currently relies largely on whether the patient gets therapy or not, and how much or how little therapy they receive. So the goal with the research was to break these out to delineate specialties and remove that direct link between nursing and therapy in order to better identify services and needs. So now you arrive at five distinct buckets making up your payment versus three. And those five are a PT-OT bucket, a speech bucket, a nursing bucket, an NTA bucket, and a non-case mix bucket. And so we're going to briefly walk through those five components and what they're proposed to entail. And we're going to start with PT and OT. And this is kind of interesting as it was separated out from speech because the historical data has shown that there's little correlation between their costs. So where PT and OT costs tend to increase as the patient becomes more independent and are highest at the beginning of a stay, the speech costs tend to increase the more dependent a patient becomes, and they remain pretty stable on average throughout. The NTA component would be heavily driven by things such as drug costs, and then the non-case mix bucket would cover room and board and other administrative or capital costs. The fifth piece would then be the nursing costs and would strictly aim to capture everything related to nursing service delivery and social services. So if we take the five-section payment model and we apply it to the real world, you'll notice that different patient diagnoses and comorbidities will in fact differ in where the bulk of their costs come from. So let's take a resident A, for example, who just had a stroke and has multiple comorbidities. Typically, they have higher NTA or drug costs and higher speech costs than, let's say, the contrast, which would be resident B, who's a post-op orthopedic surgery patient who's a fairly younger senior, right? The residents B, their costs are typically higher in the PT and OT bucket and the nursing category. So the good news in all of this is that there is a model that's very patient-facing. It's in line with the different legislation that the skilled nursing community is already engaged in. It's aimed at quality outcomes and really the patient experience. There's also an opportunity for providers to accurately capture their costs and be reimbursed for some outliers and extensive services. The flip side is that the word is out there that what has been termed a routine stay patient will indeed have a lower reimbursement on average for their therapy services. And there are indeed difficulties with this model that could become very interesting. So as a provider, how do you direct CMS on accurately capturing those costs throughout the length of stay when it varies in terms of when your costs can be heavier or lighter as it relates to therapy, as it relates to resident A and resident B with different diagnoses and different comorbidities? And then on the flip side, as a provider, do you receive reimbursement at a more constant rate out of this plan? What kind of effect would that have? And could that lead to fewer resources for patients at the beginning of a stay? Let's say a short stay, for example, when resources are typically front-loaded. These concerns are real. They could become problematic, especially in a bundled payment program, for example. So although this is all very thought-provoking and very interesting and brings up a lot of opportunity for discussion, it is indeed still research and not yet set in stone as of today's date. This podcast is really aimed at providing a synopsis of the research and the plan and really is in no way a reflection of the opinion of LifeCare Services. The Health Services Division within LifeCare Services will continue to follow this closely and provide updates as we know them. So thanks for tuning in to today's podcast.
Legal disclaimer. LifeCare Services LLC is not engaged in rendering legal advice. Therefore, any information provided in this podcast, although intended to be correct, is also not intended to replace or supersede the advice of your legal counsel. Also, thank you to Ben Sounds for the music provided in this podcast.